Get Talent Podcast.
Ready to rock, Danny?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Awesome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get Talent Podcast. This is episode 4. I hope you're ready for an awesome one. This was an interesting topic because after a recent call with a client, Jana Chazanowski, actually our director of operations, said something I found profound. She said, a dog with 3 owners will likely starve.
Oh.
And I'm like, what kind of like Buddhist wisdom? Where did that come from? Like, she said it in a way I was like so profound. I think my jaw like dropped. I'm big into right. quotes, Danny. You know right. me, right? Like, I love yeah. quotes. I love maxims and mottos and whatever.
Yeah.
And I had never heard that. And I was like, oh my gosh, that speaks to me so much because it's what we see in recruitment.
Yeah.
And it's a red flag, right?
Absolutely.
And so then I got thinking, what other red flags are out there that we can help people with in their requisition process, right? So Danny, today let's talk about red flags in the requisition process and what people can do to fix them. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm the same as you. When I heard that, it took me a second to kind of to think about it, to understand it really fully. But I also thought it was great. And I love that we all have our different sayings that we bring to the table here. But
yes, I love it. I love sayings. Yeah. Do you like sayings?
I do. Yeah. So
I love it.
It's good.
All right. So let's get into the red flags.
Let's go right into it.
Danny, what are the top 5 red flags that people need to worry about in their requisition process?
Okay, top 5. Let's start with the first one. This is one that we pretty much, I think, tell our clients right away after we're taking a job brief when they ask us, what are the next steps? So the first thing we need to have from our
number
client,
one.
Number one is a job description.
Wow.
That sounds so basic.
Yeah, it
does,
right? Do
people come to you without a job description?
Yeah, I mean, we have it all the time.
Crazy talk. How do you have a job without a job description?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Why do people do this, Danny?
You know, I think it's a couple things. I think most of the time, you know, I think there's a couple situations. The first one, they might not be really fully ready to hire for the position because usually when you are, you do have something at least prepared. And then I would say the other thing is you don't necessarily know what they don't know what they want yet.
That's right.
So
right.
it's taking them, they're kind of procrastinating on putting that together because they're not sure how to put it into words.
Or, you know, or maybe, you know, maybe they're just, they feel like they can't be bothered.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're so busy
right.
because they need people. They're so swamped. Just right. give me a so-and-so. Just give right. me a such-and-such person.
Right.
Or maybe they think it's so obvious. Oh, I need a relocation consultant. Duh, like obvious, you know.
Right, exactly. Anyone. That's a good point.
But it's not obvious.
No,
it's not obvious. I can't read your mind, right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, all the time we hear these companies talk about, oh, we're different. Well, you look the same to me. Why are you different? Tell me.
Please.
Right? Right. Nothing's obvious.
Right.
All the things that make you different as a company go into your job description. It's the people you want, right? It's that DNA, that culture, right? So
right.
you've got to put it in the job description. And the process of writing it down on paper is also your way of thinking through the process. So if you're a hiring manager, you got to do that work. If you're a recruiter, internal recruiter who we partner with all the time, you have to push back on the business and you have to say, listen, hiring manager, I need you to write this out. I know it seems elementary and trivial and the least of your worries, but your ability to articulate this accurately is going to be our ability to fill it with a great person.
Gosh.
That's it. That's exactly it. And, you know, what we can do when we've done for clients is give them a format. If that's something, you know, you've never written a job description before, we do it every day.
Happy.
You know, we can help them with that and just fill it in. And
here's a template. Here's a template. Here's a form. Fill it out. No big deal.
Don't
have to be some big, scary, you know, piece of art. Just fill out this form.
Exactly.
It's gotta be done.
That's right.
Love it. Excellent. Yes. Job description. Must have.
Must have.
Number the second red flag people need to avoid?
So the second red flag, which we've experienced in a lot of these job briefing calls, is when you're speaking with either one or multiple hiring managers, where they're not sure yet who the position will be reporting into, which you would think would be something, you know, right off the bat that is clear. It's clearly defined, but in many cases, it's not always clear to us who's the hiring manager or who the position reports into, and they don't know it a lot of times themselves even.
And this, so the second red flag is not having a hiring manager assigned to the role.
Oh no.
Exactly.
Who does this person report to? Can you imagine showing up to work and not knowing who your boss is? Can you imagine like being productive in a company, yes, not knowing who you're accountable to?
I don't know.
Right. That's, you can't.
Right.
And crazy. How do we tell, you know, our candidates a story of the company? One of the biggest things that we do for our clients is also not only sell the company, but sell the person that they're going to be working for.
Yes.
Which is actually, in many cases, like really, like mostly what comes down to people's decision is who you're working for. You know, yes, that's like a huge part of it. So if we don't have that information, it's really difficult for us to do our job the right way.
Yeah, it is. And we don't know who's going to be making the final decision on the candidate. Mm. So it's like, okay, we're just going to throw this amazing candidate into your organization and they're just going to, they're going to float around like Dorothy in the tornado.
Oh my God!
You know, trying to figure out who do I interview with next? Who's going to make the decision? I talked to Joe, I talked to Steve, I talked to Susie, I talked to I don't know where I stand. I don't know. Nobody's calling me back. I don't know. And this is where Jana said, a dog with three owners likely starves.
Oh.
And I've seen this in real life. Talking about the dog, it's funny because like, I don't know if you remember like when people would live with each other, you know, earlier maybe in your life or whatever, you have roommates, right? And the apartment gets a dog, right?
Right.
It's like, whose dog is it? I don't know. You know, well, who walked it? Like, I don't know. Who's supposed to clean up? Who bought food? I don't know. When was the last time I ate? I don't, you know what I mean? And like, imagine being the dog.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's how we feel. That's right.
Yeah. Well, that's what the clients feel, right? They don't know who do I report to? Who gives me food? Who gives me feedback? Who do I ask for my time off, right? So all of this, you know, if you're a hiring manager, you know, or if you're a, you know, internal recruiter, just know that this is a major red flag. It seems minor. Oh, well, why do they need that information? We'll figure out later. They don't know Joe yet anyway. What do they care? It's just a big red flag. And a lot of times it's also symptomatic of internal politics, of some dysfunctional internal politics in the organization. If they can't say who the job reports to yet, they haven't actually figured out. They don't have a clear org chart, right? And that's because maybe there's a lack of leadership in other areas too. So this could be symptomatic of other things. So we need, you know, we highly recommend, and frankly, we won't work without it, knowing who the hiring manager is on the job.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Number three, what is the number three red flag?
No clear salary range.
What?
Yes, I feel that. I mean, it's, you know, what we get a lot of people saying to us, you know, really depends on the person, you know, and that's really difficult to work with.
Great. You're going to interview LeBron James. You know, a year.
Right.
But he's really good. What does that mean? Depends on the person. Like, there's got to be a limit.
Yeah, exactly. They give us a huge range of 50,000 to 120,000, something like that. I mean, you know, it's the same thing. And we've come across this where we'll work on a search without a clearly defined salary range, and we always get into trouble with that.
Yes,
you know, always.
Yeah, it's a trap, right? Because you're like, oh, sweet, like, okay, so now I'm going to go find somebody amazing. And you think they're a $100,000 person, and you send them in, and they're like, well, I think they're maybe only a $60,000 person. Whoa, hold on now. Their expectation was, you know, I need to know what I'm shopping for. What, you know, am I over here in Gucci or am I in Gap?
I'm rich.
I need to know what I'm shopping for.
That's right. That's right.
You know, and we're in the business of selling candidates, mm-hmm. and you can't sell anything without a price tag on it.
No, you can't. And, you know, a lot of times clients, I've worked on searches, well, where they have no idea till the very end. And then, you know, that always causes issues because their expectations are completely mismatched in this situation.
Yes, that's right.
And it also tells me that they don't have a budget.
Yeah.
They're a company operating without a budget, operating without salary, you know, salary bands and things like that, right? Which is, you know, common best practice nowadays. So if you are a hiring manager or an internal recruitment person, it is important that you insist on a salary range. And what does a good salary range look like, Danny?
Good.
I mean, it all depends on the job. So for instance, so let's just give an example. I would say somewhere, you know, if we look at a, you know, if one of our jobs we work on is a business development job. So a lot of times they'll give us a salary range for those types of jobs. So they may say, you know, somewhere between 1 to 125 or right. 1 to 120. I think that's
a 20% variance.
I think that's reasonable. I think that's fair. Or some of them might say, you know, between 60 to 70. That even gives us something to work with, sure. Right?
Okay.
Sure. I think once you start going above that 20%, then it's just the gap.
So that's a good one. So it needs to be between 10 and 20% variance. You don't want it too tight either. You don't want to be like, pay 85, not a dollar more, not a dollar less. I mean, you know, there are variances.
A little flexibility.
Right?
Right.
Because you're also going to paint yourself into a corner if they come back and they want another, you know, $5,000.
That's right.
Like that, right. Right. Do what you got to do the deal. Right. But yeah, so 10 to 20%. Variance, no more, no less. That's what I'm saying. Love it.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. Number four
is something, you know, a question that when I first started out, I didn't ask enough, but I always try to find out what their interview process is. So a red flag is not having a laid out or outlined interview process.
Interesting.
You got it.
Yeah, you know, and I could see that because people don't always interview a lot of candidates. Some shops you go to, they interview and hire 20 people a year. You know, this hiring manager might hire 20 people a year. Some places the hiring manager hires one person per year or 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have people with varying understandings of how to hire people. You also have organizations sometimes that insist on way too many layers and hoops to jump through. What are some of the challenges you've seen with the interview process?
The issue is, there's a few issues. The biggest one is it tends to get stalled. You would send a candidate in, you know, they'll speak with that point of contact you have. And then sometimes from there, it takes them a few days to actually figure out who that next person is or in general, who is this? Who's even in the interview process? We got to figure this out. So you're already starting late. And I've had that happen to me a few times because by not asking that, you're not getting them to even think about that. You know, if they don't have that.
I think that every interview adds about a week to the hiring process.
Yeah. That's it.
And if you think about it roughly like that, and sometimes, they'll be like, oh, we'll schedule an interview next day. But then what if, like, John can't make it and Susie can, you know, or what if that candidate can't make it, you know, or holiday happens, or you know, and then, of course, with every person that interviews them, that's every opinion you have to consider.
Yeah.
More meetings, more whatever. So then you're adding probably a week per interview to the process. So if you think about it that way and you say, okay, do I want a 1 week hiring process? Do I want a 4 week hiring process? And oh, by the way, what can happen in 4 weeks? A lot of these candidates we go after are passive candidates. They're highly successful and happy in their jobs. We come along and say, hey, but have you considered this amazing opportunity and the life you could have over here? And like, no, gosh, I haven't. Do you have a resume? No, gosh, I don't have a resume. They get the resume, they start talking to their friends and family, they get excited about the opportunity, and now they got a resume. Now they got their Zoom blazer picked out. Now they're excited about new opportunities and new frontiers. And now they start interviewing at your company, the first one goes well, and they're like, gosh, that felt good.
Oh yeah.
Let's do that again. Let's go interview at some more places. So now 4 weeks later in your interview process, you're finally ready to make an offer, and this candidate has received another offer from somewhere else, or God forbid, even accepted another offer. We've had that many times.
Oh, yeah.
And it all comes down to how many layers of interviews and how many people are involved in the hiring process.
Yeah, that's it. And it's got to be laid out. You have to know all the players in the process. And that's the easiest way to make this go smooth, because you see it all the time.
So what's the best practice?
Best practice is I would set up at least 2 interviews.
Okay.
3 is a good number, I would say. So I would say, you know, at least a Zoom interview with maybe the recruiter, and then the second one with the hiring manager of the position, or potentially, you know, maybe one with the recruiter, the internal HR person, and then one with the hiring manager and maybe someone else in the business. We have a client that does interviews with colleagues as well. So maybe putting someone else into the mix. But after 3 interviews, like you said, it just keeps getting extended. You want to give the candidate enough of a, you know, enough time to make a decision and to kind of be courted into the process. So you don't necessarily want to do it one and done, but you know, you have to, you know, really kind of limit it at a certain point.
Well, and I think that, you know, our internal recruiter partner should also remember, I mean, the external recruiter who brought the candidate to you has already screened them, interviewed mm-hmm. them, you know, verified, you know, what they, you know, what their experience is, and hand selected this person.
Yeah.
And they're a professional interviewer.
Up to me.
Right.
So you got to almost count that as 1. So by that's the time true. They get submitted, they're on 2 at that point already.
That's right. And then that's the 3 in total. That would be a great way to do it. And that's what we do with a lot of our clients.
So external recruiter interview, internal recruiter interview, hiring manager, bing, make the offer.
And that's it. Exactly.
Don't overcomplicate it.
Yeah. Exactly. And if you find the right person, make the offer. Don't wait.
What do you think about these like panel interviews?
I hear that. I think there's definitely some benefits to, you know, being able to compare a lot of people at once. I just think the reality is, you know.
Two things. What do you think about panel interviews where there's multiple people interviewing one person? And then what do you think about the whole like best and final 3 candidate process? I love it.
Panel interviews are okay. I mean, the feedback I get from a lot of candidates is it's a little bit intimidating and intense, and they kind of sometimes feel like they're being, I guess the right word, I don't know if it's the right word, but judged. You know, it's very, you know, intense for them. So they don't always perform in the best way. Sometimes clients feel it's like efficient to do that. So you have like all these people in one time doing it. I've also heard it's like hard sometimes for them to get like attention with one hiring manager. So they'll maybe one person or one interview will be doing all the talking. We don't really get to speak with the other people. So I don't think it's necessarily the best way to do it, especially when you have like 4 people at one time just kind of on this one person. I don't love it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't love it either. I hear the efficiency thing, but I mean, I think the flip side of that too is now you have to find a time that works for 3 different people and the candidate, and then you do it. And then you have to get like feedback a lot of times written from all the people who are in it. And it's kind of like, I feel like the downside outweighs the upside.
Yeah, I agree. I always prefer, you know, 1-2 people at most, I would say on an interview, really, you know?
And then you see this other thing where folks require like 3 finalists or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We've been seeing that a lot. And, you know, that's something that we have to usually now we have to kind of know right off the bat. So we know how to help our clients in the best way possible.
You know, what I see when I see that? I see a senior executive that doesn't trust their management team.
Wow.
Yep. That's what I've seen also.
Because what it usually is the 3 finalists have to go before the big boss. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like the external recruiter talks to 9 people. They submit the 3 that they love the most. Then the manager picks the one that they like the most and says, send me 2 more.
What?
And it's like, no, those were 3. Those were the ones that were really good.
Those were the ones.
Interviewed 9, 10, 13, 15 people. Those were the ones. That's it. Those are the ones.
That's the people, right?
Those are the people, yeah.
Right. And that has happened to us where, you know, they'll wait. And I think it's a big mistake. I think there's a lot of missed opportunities. Candidates will drop off if you wait a month, like we were talking about before. How much changes, you know, we have, yeah, it's it's not a great way to do it. And think there's got to be flexibility.
Yeah.
There has to be.
So what is our advice to our hiring managers and our internal recruiters?
Our advice is, you know, speak with your leader and really understand, do you really need to see three candidates? And, you know, before jumping into that, the other thing is, I think it is our job to explain to them, depending on the conditions of the market. And I think in any market, really, it's competitive, but we need to make them aware of that. You know, you may find somebody that's great, but you may not find another comparable candidate because there's so many factors that go into this for another 6 months to a year.
Yes.
Maybe more. So
this is like the hardest market to present multiple candidates in.
It is.
Because they're getting so many offers from so many places, you know,
yeah.
And it's just they're overwhelmed.
Oh, well.
So I think that, you know, my advice would be that you're right. They need to kind of push back and say, listen, big boss, I know you like to sit in the big chair and I know you like to bring the people before you. And I know you like for them to kiss the ring and beg for the job. I get it.
Right.
I get it. I mean, it sounds fun. I get it.
Oh,
but that's not today, right? Today is, I'm going to interview three of these people and I'm going to put the best one in front of you. And unless they have three heads, you're going to bless it and it's going to happen.
Exactly.
It's more of like, I'm looking for your blessing. I'm not looking for you to tell me which one is best. I'm going to tell you which one is best. And you're going to tell me if I'm absolutely out of my mind, in which case I'll go back and get what I consider second best. Maybe I missed something.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is the way it's going to work. I think how it works for Big Boss is you say, you know, listen, it saves you a ton of time. Right. And then we're not going to be in a situation where you hire somebody that wasn't my choice and now I have to lead them. How am I supposed to lead the person if they were your choice? And oh, by the way, it sets up a power dynamic that this person's going to be in your office every 2 weeks. They think they report to you because you're the one that decided on them.
It's a great point.
So how are you going to run the organization personally supervising 500 people?
Reinforcements have arrived.
Right? Yeah. So Big Boss has to trust, you know, the folks that they put in place to be a hiring manager.
Yeah, that's what I've been seeing recently with a lot of that. It's a lack of trust.
And I'll tell you know what? In our own organization, really, I mean, that's how we do it internally here. Right?
Exactly.
The hiring manager goes out and they find the best people. They go through a million of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they present them to me once they've already decided. And it's really a formality. It's more of a meet and greet.
Right.
And then I always be like, wow, that was incredible. I don't know how you did that. I don't know how you found that person. That was incredible. It sounds great. Love it. You know?
Yeah. It feels great to have that trust. And, you know, I think there's a lot more confidence from the hiring manager on the interviews when they know that they've got that support from that person behind
them. And it's their call.
And it's their call. And they feel good about it. And this is great when you're making a decision. You know, that's what I found personally, you know, working here and going through that process. So,
you know what? Half of the wacky job descriptions we get or job profiles we get to work on are because there's conflicting visions between Big Boss and hiring manager.
That's good stuff.
That's it.
You know,
yeah.
When we get people who want to do in person and, you know, somebody, you know, Big Boss wants everybody in person. Hiring manager understands, you know, people are going to be more effective or they can find a better talent in a city that they don't happen to be headquartered in.
Yeah.
Right. And so you get this wacky, like, you know, requirement or people realize, you know, Big Boss wants everybody in a suit and tie.
My king.
You know, and hiring manager who's doing it every day realizes that the best people don't necessarily want to wear a suit and a tie, but they're still going to get their activity done. And then you get these weird, hypocritical, contradictory kind of job profiles. And you're like, where did this come from? It came from Big Boss being too involved.
Yep. The bottleneck. Yeah, that's right.
That sounds like a podcast right there. Big Boss.
Big Boss, yeah, that'll be the next one.
How to deal with Big Boss. Big Boss, baby.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got? Number five?
Number five is they haven't decided when they would like to hire for the position. And no one knows exactly when you're going to hire for a job, but, you know, they might say to us, you know, we'll hire them. You know, if you found someone, we'll hire them next month for the right person. But ideally, not really sure. It might be in the next year or so. And we've, you know, it's kind of like the salary range, you know, hire them within, you know, 1 month to 1 year. But yeah. we can't,
right.
We can't work with that.
Which, you know, also means never is what it
means. Which means usually never. Yeah.
Usually never. Usually we submit a whole bunch of candidates and they never hire them.
Yeah.
It's because they don't really have a need. They have an unction. They have a want. They have a wondering of what could be.
You're a passive hiring manager, right?
It's, yeah. We have passive candidates. We have passive hiring managers.
They're open to opportunity. You know, they're open.
They're open-minded.
I never want to turn anything down. Yeah. Never turn down an opportunity to see somebody.
Yeah. But... Oh, I love seeing people. I love meeting people. It's networking, really.
Right. Right. And we always say we don't interview people for a living.
We don't do this for practice, right?
Yeah.
We do this because we need to brush up on our interview skills.
Right. And a client, I don't think they would do that either. I don't think a hiring manager has the time to just be interviewing people for fun, just to see what's out there.
Yeah. Do you want a candidate who comes in and just wants to get their ego fluffed up and know they could have had the job if they wanted it, but they weren't really serious about leaving?
Exactly. No. It's the same thing. Yeah.
So don't be that hiring manager, right?
Yeah.
And what I really look at is I when we talk to hiring managers, we talk to recruiters, I'm like, tell me why this role is open.
Yeah.
Make my day.
Did somebody leave? Usually that's a good sign. If somebody left, that's a good sign. Like, this person's been, you know, somebody was over here making the donuts for 5 years, super successful. They went on to go be senior donut maker over at this company. Okay, great. I know that you have a process that has a gap in it currently because you do not have this requisition filled. Super on it. Well, we were kind of thinking maybe one day I want to hang it up. Might need somebody here to run the shop. It's like, well, you call me when that day happens.
Right.
Because that is not today.
Right. Exactly.
And it's like, you know, I was thinking it'd be nice to double sales.
That's really amazing.
Well, probably would be nice, you know, but there's not a need there. It's like, oh, we lost the biggest account. We have to backfill it. Ah, that's a need. So be careful with requisitions that don't have urgency behind them and aren't filling a specific need.
Yeah.
You know, what I would say is, and really have a higher date that you're working towards, like a deadline for this role to be filled. Like, this role needs to be filled by August 1st or else somebody's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you need to know.
And if you're going to do a search like that, where it's a little more strategic, there's no like pain that you need somebody, then retain the agency or retain us to work on the search, because then we can spend the time to do that. And it becomes a different type of search. It's a like market research. It's market intelligence, as opposed to just finding a candidate. And we're paid for that, for our time. And there's a commitment there. So,
yes,
you know, if you want to go that approach, I think that's the right way, where we can, you know, use a retainer in that situation.
Yeah, an engaged search requires, so everybody knows out there, for people that don't know, for hiring managers and internal recruiters, an engaged search is when you put a retainer or a down payment down on the search, right? Usually right. It's, you know, a third to 50% of the search fee. And that lets the search firm know that you are serious about the search. It usually indicates a very high degree of success because both parties are engaged, right? Now they've put money down, so they're chasing that investment. You've accepted money, so you don't want to have to refund it. You're going to go ahead and deliver on that investment. And really, engaged search is quite valuable in that regard.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, I guess just to kind of close it off, right? Bottom line, what would you say is, you know, what a hiring manager, just kind of a takeaway, what are the top things a hiring manager should be thinking of before they're going to speak to their recruiter or internal HR person?
So if you're a hiring manager or internal recruitment person out there, what you should really do in your organization is you should develop a one-page form document. And that one-page form document should have, job title, where the job is located, remote, in the office, whatever, what the salary range is for the job, who the job reports to, the full job description, and when the job needs to be filled. And you take that form, and when a hiring manager comes up to you and says, hey, I think I want to get another, you know, donut maker over here. Okay, great. I'm going to send you the requisition form. Send it back to me. And it should be signed by that person's boss or whoever has budgetary responsibility.
Yeah! It's a great idea.
Because now we know that that job is funded. Well, first we know what the job is clearly. Everybody has talked about it. Their boss has signed off on the funding and the organizational structure of that job. And now we have all the information we need to run and go fill that thing in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
That's perfect. I think if companies did that, it would change everything. It would change most of these issues would be non-existent.
Yeah, and internal recruiters, you're going to love it because you don't get a lot of garbage on your desk. You don't get a lot of half-baked ideas that you running back for more information, When the recruiter's not successful, you're going back and rehabbing the job description, or when you get a bunch of junk candidates and they don't fit the profile. Well, what profile, right? And then when people come to you for a new job, you get to send them this sheet and then you know if they're serious, if they come back with something.
That's right.
Their boss signs it.
Yeah.
So really get that job requisition form internally hammered out, include all of those things. Let's go over one more time. Include the job title, where the job sits and reports, who it reports to by name, not like director of, like by name. I want to know it reports to Gary, right? And if what it pays, what the range is, salary ranges, acceptable pay ranges, full job description, signed off. Oh, and then when the job needs to be filled by, signed off by that person's manager, by the department head who owns the budget.
You're my hero.
That's great. Simple way to solve most of these problems.
We're going to start providing this document.
I think so. I think that's
to our clients.
Great idea. We should talk about it next week. This is
good. We really should. We're going to start doing this. Awesome. Great topic, Danny. I love these red flags. I love the fact that we fixed these red flags for everybody. If you liked it, let us know. Put it in the comments. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you, hear from you. You'll hear from us. We won't see you at all next week.
Take care.
Take care, everybody. Hey, if you like the show today, please hit subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. We'd appreciate it so much. Also, feel free to connect with us on LinkedIn or check us out on glomo.com. Get Talent Podcast.